I'm Dan Carell, CEO of the Digital Commerce Alliance, and this is Commerce Code, a bi-weekly digital commerce podcast for leaders in card linking, loyalty and digital marketing, mobile wallets and payments, and financial data. Thanks for joining this running conversation with leaders in the industry. And if you like this podcast, come join us at a Digital Commerce Alliance event. You can learn more at www.digcomall.org. This week, I'm talking with Alex Edelman from Lolli. Lolli is a cashback and Bitcoin rewards platform that lets users earn rewards at over 25,000 leading stores and brands. Lolli is based in New York City and was founded in 2018 by Alex. Alex's previous company, Cosmic, was acquired by Pop Sugar and then subsequently by Rakuten. In the interview, Alex and I talk about Lolli's bank-integrated card-linked offer platform, Bitcoin-driven loyalty rewards, rich transactional data that they can use to create compelling experiences and offers for consumers, and, well, there are a few detours into psychology, history, finance, and technology to boot. It's a great conversation, so stay tuned for Can CLO and Blockchain Transform Cashback Rewards? A conversation with Alex Edelman of Lolli. This episode of Commerce Code is brought to you by Agio, a global leader in engagement platform technologies that create compelling experiences, foster people connections, and cultivate brand advocates worldwide. With more than 45 years of experience, Agio empowers Fortune 500 companies to deliver extraordinary brand experiences for employees, consumers, channel partners, subscribers, and members. Fueled by a holistic engagement ecosystem across workplace engagement, experiential, social activation, customer loyalty, and digital asset experiences, Agio's mission is inspiring people to achieve more, one interaction, transaction, and experience at a time. Agio, engagement unleashed. Alex, welcome to Commerce Code, and thanks so much for joining us today. Where are you joining us from?
Joining from New York City.
Terrific. Good. Well, look, we're excited about this conversation because, you know, you're doing something genuinely new at Lolli. And as I've seen just by looking into the company and some conversations with your folks, you know, bringing together a few different things that I know our listeners are very interested in, CLO or card-linked offers, there's blockchain, there's gamification of offers, there's actually games themselves involved in your approach, and it all kind of meets in the middle there. So I want to get to all of that. But to kind of start off, I know that you're an experienced entrepreneur in this space. You've built and sold companies before. So I'd just kind of love to know, bigger picture, when you were developing Lolli in your head and then in the real world, what problems did you see in the market that you felt like you could solve?
I think one of the biggest things that I looked at is, how do you bring people into this new world of payments and money? I'd been into crypto, Bitcoin specifically, since 2013. And really, my interest in it came from my frustration with the current payment systems, the current money system on many levels. And so being a kid of the internet and moving money all over the world since I was like 16, you know, hiring engineers and buying, you know, digital goods, you just realize like how broken money is in general. And so, I was really excited about ushering into this new world of money for both merchants and consumers. My last company, I think, as many people know, was acquired by Rakuten, biggest cashback company in the US and many parts of the world, and got to learn a lot over those years from building Cosmic and being a leader in the payment space, and then later in the rewards and loyalty space, and got to see what the world was like of loyalty and how to drive people into stores, how to drive people online. And then the idea for Lolli came from making Bitcoin more accessible through cashback rewards and also bringing merchants into crypto through loyalty and rewards, but ultimately driving people into stores and online and increasing conversions and increasing, you know, improving ROAS. So all of those things combined, you know, it's never one idea or one moment that leads to, I think, some of the best ideas in the world. It's always a number of things.
That's terrific. When you mentioned the brokenness of money, I remember, gosh, it was a long time ago now, but it wasn't the 19th century when we were refinancing our house at one point, about 15 years ago. And the way the process ended was literally a human being walking in with piles of paper for us to sign on our dining room table. And I just thought, what on earth? Because by then, you know, let's just say it was 2005 or something. I mean, by then, like, that was ridiculous even then.
Right. And so it's amazing how, you know, how much stuff, and I think we often just take systems and whatever for granted. And the positive side of that is it just means there's a terrific amount of low-hanging fruit. It's not easy, but it's there to kind of pick off and to fix. So I'd love to talk about, as I sort of previewed a little bit, boy, there's so many different things going on in the solution that you'll pull together. And, you know, maybe we can start with card-linked offers as an element. Would love to just get your angle on how Lolly is kind of approaching CLO. And, you know, is it different? How's it different? You know, what's your view on that?
Yeah, so I love the CLO industry. I love what it does for the consumer. I think, you know, you bring your existing bank, your existing cards, you don't have to change your behavior. You shop as you normally would and you get rewarded. I think the, you know, one of the difficulties in the space is how do you provide value for the merchant? And so, you know, one of the things that we studied back when, you know, I was at Rakuten and launched Rakuten was a CLO program. And you know, since, you know, seen a lot of companies emerge in the space and quote unquote innovate in the space. But really, at the end of the day, it's still built on, you know, Visa, MasterCard rails. And there's not a ton of innovation, in my opinion, since the early days of Dosh and Empire back, you know, a long time ago. And so what we did is we took a very novel approach. We said, okay, there's incredible innovation in open banking and with Plaid, Finicity, Yodlee, MX, all these like open banking initiatives that where you could tap into full transactional history. And there's so much more rich data that you can pull and drive, you know, users into in this like new world of open banking and full transactional insights. So that's really our main innovation is that we are tapping into clearly the card transactions, but mainly into the banking stack. So we're able to process very inexpensively, next to free for our users, 44 transactions per user per month. And we can do transactional lookbacks. Let's just say, for example, if you're CVS and you are, you know, looking to conquest at Walgreens, for instance, you can actually use Lolly's technology to target a Walgreens user. So there's like a lot of very interesting things you can do when you have full transactional insights and you're not paying Visa, MasterCard, Amex per transaction, which becomes prohibitively expensive. So Lolly very uniquely works on the bank level in addition to the, you know, card transaction level.
That's really terrific. And, you know, I'm probably not capable of fully understanding an accurate answer to this question, but banking IT is notoriously terrifying and maybe like terrifyingly old in some cases, as I have understood it. How hard is it to make the move? I mean, you're a technologist yourself, Alex. And so I wonder, what's the layperson's explanation of, you know, how do you get this done in the banking stack to make this possible?
So on my side, it's hard, but for the merchant, they don't have to do anything. And for the consumer, they have to do next to nothing. So part of getting technology to be adopted, you have to make it very simple. And 5 years ago, 6 years ago, no one, you know, really was linking their bank accounts. I mean, relative to the world. Now over 125, maybe 150 now, million Americans are linking their accounts, you know, with Plaid, Finicity, Yodlee, MX. It's become just, you know, part of everyday financial interactions with any technology, with these neobanks, with your bank, with your crypto exchanges, whatever you're doing online, you are comfortable with linking your bank account, similar to how you would like sign in with Facebook, sign in with Google. You're saying, hey, I'm taking my Chase account, I'm connecting it into this fintech app, and we're sharing it in that capacity. And so it becomes very easy for us to have these consumers do that and expose their transaction data in return for getting rewarded for where they're transacting. And you know, we don't sell data, and we have, you know, no plans to ever sell data, but we can function the same way a CLO would by driving somebody into the store or driving somebody online based on their transactional behavior.
Well, that's really, as I understand it, kind of a part of the engagement approach for you is that you've got this rich data and it really helps with engagement. As an aside, you know, as you're thinking about it, is, you know, I think at every turn when folks say, oh, people will never do fill in the blank, I think people will do, you know, whether it's signing up for certain things or, you know, like opening up your bank account data in return for something that makes sense. There's just example after example of takes a little time and then there's a tipping point and then basically everybody does it.
America's already doing it. So we're not trying to reinvent the wheel there. People are just linking their bank accounts for, you know, signing up for a fintech app or whatever. So they're already doing it. And there's so many examples of that. The adoption curve is already happening. So we're not reinventing the wheel on that. We're just applying it to rewards in a very unique way to rewards, but not necessarily unique to fintech or crypto.
So I'd love to hear more about that. So you know, you've got the transactional data, and you've got this approach. And I will say it's quite easy. I was on your website, so you know, it's very easy to sort of sign up any card, and so then you're in the system. What is your kind of philosophy for how to engage customers? What works? What doesn't? Maybe where does gamification fit in? I know that's all part of the puzzle.
I look at it as like, you know, shopping rewards are gamification on top of the world. Like you're taking your everyday actions of going and getting a bite to eat or going to your grocery store, and you're adding this layer of gamification to your, you know, mundane everyday shopping experience. And that's one of the many reasons people love rewards. It's like you're spending money, but you're getting something back, and you're saving money. You're willing to go to different places when you're saving money and having this like gamified experience. So we gamify in a bunch of different ways, but the obvious way is gamifying on the transactional level. So every single time that you shop, you get rewarded. That's, you know, that's very simple. We also get at another layer of gamification through literal games. So every day users can tap a loot box in the Lolly app and get a, you know, free cash or free Bitcoin, depending on what they're choosing. You know, we're definitely known very uniquely for giving people Bitcoin rewards. We have about 50-50 are now coming in and using cash, and some people are using Bitcoin. Now that Bitcoin is, you know, reaching all-time highs again and it's back in the zeitgeist, we very much see people are very excited about Bitcoin. But we also run in a, you know, very large cashback business as well, where we can drive this gamified behavior on cashback, and we don't, you know, have to convince people who don't want Bitcoin to go earn Bitcoin. So every day someone can open the app, tap the loot box, earn cash back, earn Bitcoin there. And then that daily active behavior, we drive people into different stores. So a lot of our merchants really love that because it just drives such a more active user that's coming for the game and staying for the shopping rewards.
As you talk about the Bitcoin element and making it, you know, making it accessible, making it spendable, that might be I don't know how much you think about this or if it was part of the theory up front, but you know, that sounds like one of those things that could end up being a side door or a back door or whatever to cracking open a very important thing in the blockchain or Web3 world, which is, you know, to make Bitcoin not just a store of value, but something that can be, you know, dealt with on more of a day-to-day basis. I wonder what you think about, like, how plausible is that? And do you see people, you know, willing to behave that way? It sounds like you do.
Yeah. So I have a very realistic approach to it. I've been in the space for a long time. I've heard every argument for, you know, back in the day, back in 2013, you know, many people thought that it was going to be a payment layer. And I really had very low expectations on what it was going to be on the payment side. I think that the biggest moments of adoption were always going to be store of value. Back in 2013, like I mentioned earlier, I was running a payment company and we were hooked into 99 different payment gateways. And we ended up going to all these merchants, biggest merchants in the world, saying, hey, you know, if you already trust us for payments, we are PCI level one compliant. What about trusting us for adding Bitcoin as a payment layer? And we heard, you know, the same thing from all these merchants. Remittance networks weren't set up. So even if you accepted it, what would you really do with it? Many merchants couldn't hold Bitcoin, you know, legally or logically hold it for, you know, their treasury departments or their finance departments would have, you know, like a panic attack if they had to go figure out that. Many people didn't even have Bitcoin. So, you know, even as a marketing tool, you don't really care about attracting 50,000 people to your to go pay with Bitcoin. And then the people that had it didn't want to pay with it. So, you know, that was sort of my first experience in Bitcoin as a payment rail. And I really wasn't very bullish on Bitcoin as payments back in the day. And I'm really not bullish on it today. I think it's going to take many, many years. And I think it's going to happen in emerging markets faster than it's going to happen in the U.S. In the U.S., we're very fortunate that we have the best currency in the world. We have a currency that the entire world would love to have, U.S. dollars. If you're in Venezuela and you have a dollar or peso or, you know, native currency that is extremely volatile and, you know, has gone through many years of hyperinflation, you're very scared of, like, what is your dollar going to be the next day? And so when you really look at it rationally, you would much rather have U.S. dollars than you would have probably Bitcoin or probably your native currency. And so I think that stable coins are going to be really positive in the whole world. And stable coins are going to be cryptocurrencies that are built on top of fiat currencies. So you're going to have a stable coin on top of US dollar, a stable coin on top of the euro. And so I think that that's sort of this next phase of adoption that's going to happen. And many people that are frustrated with the fiat system will say, okay, well, I would actually rather have Bitcoin because it has a better monetary policy, a more transparent monetary policy. And so I think over the next 5 years, every individual and every government and every institution is going to basically make a decision for their own treasuries for what are they going to hold? Are they going to hold gold? They're going to hold US dollars? They're going to hold Bitcoin? And they really have no access to gold. You know, as if you've ever studied like world politics, world history, monetary policy, most people don't have like promissory notes for gold. And so they, not to get too far down into the history lesson, but I think that the two easiest currencies that you're going to have access to are either going to be US dollars or Bitcoin. And that's my grand thesis for where the future of finance kind of goes into. And that's where I think Bitcoin has a lot of value, but also I think stablecoins have a lot of value. And I'm very bullish on stablecoins and cryptocurrency on that front.
I totally love the history dive. And I'll just say briefly, I'm secretly Canadian. And, you know, Canada has an awfully stable currency in the scheme of things, right? It's a pretty big economy. But I think everybody that's not in the United States has an intuitive appreciation for the natural instability of currency. And we just don't. I mean, we got a little bit more in the inflation of the last 3-4 years where people in the United States are going, wait a second, what? It's not, you know, like money isn't necessarily worth what it used to be, you know, but because we just had been through such a long period of low inflation, but we still don't have that intuitive sense of like actual monetary instability. And so I think your points are all really well taken. And to the extent that for what it's worth, that there was a thought that the renminbi or the yuan was going to maybe compete for that kind of role of stable global currency, I don't think anybody thinks that as we sit here today.
And just so, you know, throwing it out to the audience too, it's like I have very much become, I think, like the, for better or worse, the crypto guy for many, you know, our merchant partners that we work with. And I do really love it. I mean, it helps, you know, bridging that conversation, I think, is difficult. And many merchants are looking to get into crypto. They don't really know where to start. And so, you know, whether it's us or whether it's, you know, helping Diligence, another crypto partner, just like happy to be a resource there and have been for the last 11 years now. So have seen everything come and go, have dodged many, many nefarious actors and projects that I won't name over the years. And I've stayed very true to everything and always try to, you know, steer people in the right direction and have never gone wrong since. So happy to be a resource there for anyone in the audience that's looking to get into Bitcoin, get into crypto as a whole.
Commerce Code is brought to you in part by VantageScore. 9 of the top 10 banks and over 3,000 leading banks and fintechs use VantageScore to predict and manage repayment risk. Learn more about the latest advances in credit scoring and how to grow your lending business by leveraging financial inclusion at VantageScore.com.
So this Bitcoin and Web3 conversation is super interesting. And bringing it back to, you know, the merchant, the typical merchant, whether they're bricks and mortar or maybe they're online, what's your kind of explanation to them of, hey, here's what an approach that incorporates Bitcoin can do to enhance your business?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it's ultimately the entire reason Lolly works. If we were not driving sales to merchants, and that's ultimately what it all, every rewards company, every loyalty company, everything comes down to that. You could do the fanciest thing in the world with Web3 or, you know, crypto. It doesn't really matter unless you're driving more sales for the merchant, increasing conversion, improving ROAS, all of the above. So one of the things we figured out early on is that our users that are crypto native are the most valuable users on the internet. They have high disposable incomes. They have high net worths. They love travel. Think of it as like an Amex user on steroids. I'll just say they're a very great user, and I can kind of share more data if anyone, any merchants are interested in that, want to see some of our like case studies there. But they're typically like 4 to 5 times more valuable than your average cashback or coupon user. So the merchant gets to attract a very high value user, very high AOV, and that's one of the big plays there. People also treat Bitcoin as like a point system. For those of you who don't know, Bitcoin has a, you know, scarcity feature to it where there's only 21 million of them. And many people that understand Bitcoin and want Bitcoin realize like they're not making any more of it. You know, they're printing cash all day in the Federal Reserve, but they're not making any more Bitcoin. And so once you understand the scarcity principle, you want as much of it as possible. And so you have an increased set of expectations that you have when you're earning Bitcoin. So you think about the, you know, the average Bitcoin rewards user, they're like scouring our site and they're like, where can I shop that's not Amazon? So if you're any merchant that's competing with Amazon, which is like literally every merchant, you're trying to like attract this user that's willing to spend a lot of money, high value user, and that's going to be like looking to spend more at your site than they would at Amazon or some of your competitors. And so Lolly is built with that in mind to drive our users, whether they're cashback users, whether they're Bitcoin users, to drive them in store or online and to, you know, encourage them to spend at your site, at your stores, and really prove that conversion. We're able to show that conversion because, you know, keeping in mind that we have full transactional insights into our user shopping and behavior. Unlike many CLO partners or affiliate partners that just rely on cookie data, we have full transactional insights. We're processing 44 transactions per user per month. So we can really give you these like full data insights about our users and where they were spending previously and that they're spending at your site or store now. So I think a lot of our merchants are really impressed with the amount of data that we're able to come to them. And they're like, how do you know all of this? And we're able to show, you know, with our own data, we don't have to do like live ramp matching. We can pull all our own data that we own and we can show you where we're actually driving increase in behavior. And you don't have to do these like dramatic pauses or anything like that. We can see in real time where people are shopping and sharing and going into these stores.
It's remarkable that merchants will be able to see, at least in part, maybe in whole, like the behavior shift. Because that really is the holy grail, I think, is to figure out, you know, that nexus of sort of attribution and like marginal changes to behavior is huge. And, you know, I love the point about Amazon. I mean, I don't think on Commerce Code talked kind of extensively about how to compete effectively with Amazon, but that is like the Uber question for much of the economy, right? It's like, how do we try and have a business that's strong and has integrity and has, you know, vitality that draws people and they're excited about it against the backdrop of, well, it would be so easy to just get something or other on Amazon. So it sounds like the crypto approach or the Bitcoin approach has a powerful enough driver that it'll push people, and to your point, folks with high AOV and with, you know, high value to the merchant, it'll draw them into that environment and maybe keep them there.
Absolutely.
You know, this kind of calls for speculation, but I always want to ask it as we kind of round out these conversations. There's no way to know where we're going to be with this in a year or, well, I could say 5 years, but I think especially in a space like Web3, it's just 5 years is ridiculous. So who knows? But like a year from now or maybe two, as we're sitting here and it's going to be 2025 next year. That sounds so round. You know, mid 2025, like, what do you think will have changed in the business that you're in? It's fast moving. You know, how will it have evolved differently? Where are we going to be at?
So I think a big thing is, I'm a big believer Bitcoin is like, I mean, everyone can see the charts. And if anyone listens back to any of my predictions over the last year and a half, and this is not to brag, but all my theses about crypto have come true. The institutions came. The ETF was approved. The inflows are even more dramatic than I had even anticipated. And I had very bullish expectations of where crypto was going to be. So now the entire, like all these institutions are all in on Bitcoin. It was the most successful ETF, I think, in history, if I'm not mistaken, and significantly more successful than even gold ETF was, which I think was the previous most successful. So I think all my expectations have been completely even shattered, even to what I thought. And I had ambitious expectations. So I think what the next couple of years look like for both Bitcoin and you know, CLO, I think we enter into this more on-chain future. I think that the difficulty of the on-ramps become very, very simple. Lolly was kind of the first step of that. And, you know, we've made things very, very easy for people to get into crypto. And I think, you know, we're constantly looking at ways in which we can make it even easier for users and merchants. So I think more and more merchants start to see the value that we've, you know, shown. Like we have 6 years of data to really prove that we've made it really, really easy. I think massive amounts of consumers come into crypto once we hit all-time highs, probably in these next few weeks or even months, that we start to hit all-time highs for most of the leading cryptocurrencies. I think that retail comes back. You know, institutions are already here, as I mentioned, but consumers come back. And then once consumers are back, all the merchants are going to want to look at ways to attract these, you know, hundreds of thousands or more likely millions of users, both in the US and internationally. And they're going to be looking at apps and platforms like Lolli that already have this dedicated base of cryptocurrency users in order to attract them. And, you know, right now we have 600,000 users that we can already drive into these stores. In the next probably couple months, we're probably going to be hitting 800,000 or millions of users. And so, yeah, we're looking to drive our users into these stores and drive real sales for our merchants.
That's terrific. That's an exciting vision for the future. As to the crypto and Web3 stuff, to me, the storm that we all went through that involved storylines, including FTX and other things, to me, the ultimate lesson of the storm was that Bitcoin came out the other side of the storm looking awfully good. I think that was the main takeaway I had. And then you kind of go, okay, all right. So we had a real storm and Bitcoin's, you know, rocking. And at this point, it's, you know, multiples higher than it was at that time. I think it was hitting lows in the, 15,000 or something like that. But there's a strength there. And so for people that are not devoted skeptics, and there are many, as you know, for people who are not devoted skeptics, I think the basic strength of the platform has pretty much been demonstrated. So it will be fun to watch, you know, where this all goes, both in general and with Lolli. So thank you, Alex. Thanks so much for joining us today. Great conversation for this episode of Commerce Code, and we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
I really enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Commerce Code is sponsored by Pentadata, the all-in-one financial data API. Whether it is bank account data, credit card transaction data, or credit reports and credit scores, Pentadata has it all in one simple and easy-to-use API. With coverage of over 6,000 banks, over 200 million credit files, and 60 million merchants, you can get all the data you need for your apps at pentadatainc.com. Commerce Code is a bi-weekly podcast bringing you conversations with executives who are leading the way in digital commerce. If you like Commerce Code, your company should join the Digital Commerce Alliance and become part of our mission of advancing trade for good through standard setting, industry networking, conferences, and best practice sharing. Check out our website at www.digcomall.org. On behalf of DCA, have a great week!